All right, third and final hour, Tuesday edition, Robbie and Rex, Road 125-106.3 The Game. Paul Kaharski in for Robbie, broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, Air Conditioning, Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Hit us up on the text line or phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHoney.com, 615-737-1025. And also, I would like to give away a pair of tickets right now, Ian, agreeable Ian, to see Ghost.
Let's do it.
Bridgestone Arena this Saturday, Ghost. We aren't a bridge like yesterday by someone running into a pole, so let's do color five. How about that? Color five to win these Ghost tickets. Okay, PK.
All right.
So I called this Kaharski's Positivity Index, even though it's a very negative question, but, you know.
Let's make it positive.
Just trying to make it. Oh, wait, before we get into this, by the way.
I need to rebound from my fan experience.
Before we get into this, by the way, you need to feel better. Stilly did text me on my personal text line about the. Now, he didn't text to say anything about how he apparently every time he talks about football, he has to talk about his nether regions and privates. Nor about how, like,
this guy's a loser, and you're a loser, and everybody's a loser. And I watched Joe Burrow, and I'm tingly.
But he did say, quote, how is the union expected to win anything when the previous players didn't make sacrifices in 1987? Good history there, Jared. And the league now has it baked in their TV contracts that they get paid for the networks, even if the games aren't played. Also says the league owners will never, ever get rid of the tag. It's the biggest leverage. So that Stilly has weighed in on the labor situation.
And I read it for you, Stilly. The last I talked to Stilly about the labor situation, he didn't care about it at all.
Oh.
So I guess I've made some gains, and he's come to his senses and decided it's relevant.
Okay.
Because previously he said, I'm not going to talk about the labor situation because nobody cares. And I told him he should tell people what's worth caring about rather than just giving them what they want because it's part of our jobs. So good job, Stilly, on listening.
Well, there we go. I did not realize you guys argue about it. All right, so your positivity index, and this is a really simple question, although it may not be easy to get the answer, but right now at this moment, Tennessee Titans, they've got a presser today with Berserker. They've got...
To everybody's knowledge who doesn't speak this idiot language, it's Chad Brinker and Mike Borgonzi will be speaking.
Yeah, who along with Burke Nihil, I call Berserker.
Yeah, but Burke Nihil's not going to be there, so that's
but
a
he's
little
still,
bit confusing.
He's part of the power structure, and it works with the name.
But he's not speaking.
Yeah, but he's part of the power structure. I'm just saying, these guys still count. If you have two of three, they still count, and it's better than Gonzi's scheme. They talk today. Practice starts tomorrow. Brian Callahan talks tomorrow. We're embarking on the 2025 season. Right at this moment, how does this compare? You have been covering the Tennessee Titans since they were the Houston Oilers. I want to know how this compares to the worst you felt about two things. One, a particular Titans team, but also just the franchise in general. So the general state of affairs and also just this particular team, which, again, there's excitement with a number one pick. So certainly there have been worse, right, like feelings going into late July as you're about to start going out there with your bucket hat and your sunscreen every day.
Yeah. My mom, when I was wearing my bucket hat going to my brother's pool and or the beach, said, oh, you look like your brother Andrew. He wears that stupid hat also.
Thanks, Mom.
Yeah. I said, yeah. Well, when I had that cancer spot cut out of my face, I decided I would really keep my face out of the sun, trying not to get another one of those cancer spots. Look, I have bad memory. I always preface that for like the feel of certain seasons and things like that. And also a lot of hindsight comes into play, right? So I think I was down on last year coming in, but I don't remember exactly how down. And then I consider what unfolded last season and I remember how down I should have been. So I don't know exactly how down I was. I don't think it's, you know, the most down ever because they've got a number one quarterback coming in and there's always optimism connected to that. I think Mike Borgonzi appears to be significantly more prepared, organized, and operating with a plan than his predecessor and the front office structure. While we've broken it down and assessed it, whether it makes sense or all of that, certainly seems like he and Brinker And then their underlings are in lockstep with a plan and with a vision, understanding that there's no quick fix and that this thing calls for patience and all of that. There seems to be some reasonable planning and order to this thing. So in that regard, I don't feel terrible about it. In regard to the roster, not great. But there's been worse. Look, the last 2 years of Vrabel, that roster was worse, right? Wisenhunt, the roster was worse. Now, I'm saying that about Vrabel, particularly at the end of those seasons when the injuries came out.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
I'd have to look at the beginning of the rosters. I have a lot of questions about this group of receivers, but potential-wise and numbers-wise, they have a group out of which something could emerge. Should emerge, I'm not positive, but could emerge. So I wouldn't rank this as like the worst or amongst the worst. But there's so many unanswered questions. We don't know if Callahan could coach or not. We don't know if the line will congeal and play substantially better or not. We expect it will. We don't know if these receivers are going to emerge into a better group than they've had since A.J. Brown left. We expect it will. We don't know if they can rush the passer. We expect they won't. And we can go on and on. We don't know if L'Jarius Sneed is going to play, and he's a linchpin guy if he plays anywhere near his thing. And I think most of us expect he's not going to show up and be that guy on a regular basis because we haven't seen him do it yet. So most of the questions, you can find a way to thumbs down them right now. We need proof of concept.
So as I go through your, candidates that would compare. So like I think it was 04 was like the salary cap gutting, right? And then after that 03 season.
Knew they were going to be terrible when they got rid of Samari and Mason and all those guys.
So then then you have the excitement. But it doesn't take long before you have the excitement of Vince Young. And then you get back into, right, then you transition into Munchak. And I would imagine those were okay teams, but obviously not great teams. The Wisenhunt, I mean, that to me would be, right? Like, that would be, like, especially 14 before you had, again, the excitement of the high pick, Mariota. So that gives you new life, that gives life to everything, right?
Yes.
But before you have that, you have a season like last year. But that's the thing. Yeah, and of course, we can revisit Levis a little bit today, but that's the thing about last year that in retrospect doesn't seem – it almost seems silly. It's almost like when I think back to the Nashville Predators conversation from last summer, it was seriously – like there were people at my shop at The Athletic who were picking them to win it and people picking them to get to the Stanley Cup final, and it seems so ridiculous now. Just like a year ago – Will Levis, franchise quarterback, $250 million in your grasp, seems so ridiculous now as he's, done for the year, shoulder surgery, and hoping to latch on somewhere in this league at some point and get another chance. But a year ago, there was excitement.
Let's go back.
But it's still not the same excitement to me of like this, right? Pick one, round one, pick one.
Let's go back to 14, right? Bud had died. Tommy Smith took over. Now, I knew that Tommy Smith was kind of a disaster guy. Bud had kind of kicked him out of football operations of the Oilers. Had him taken out of the media guide. He was a KSA industry guy, but he was not an Oilers guy. And Bud, while he took care of the tax stuff in terms of his family inheriting the team, he did not lay out who was to be in charge and everything. And so the family collectively came to that decision that Tommy Smith would head it up. Didn't have a great feeling about it, but also thought, well, this is what they've decided to do. Bud really was uninvolved the last couple years there as he was starting to fail. Hey, maybe this is a new breath of fresh air. Maybe Tommy's going to let the people who surrounding him guide the franchise. Wisenhunt was a pretty hot commodity on the coaching rehire
right.
front.
That's another thing in retrospect. Right? Like if you don't remember, he took a team and almost won it all with that team.
And so I don't think – now, we knew there was a quarterback question there, right? Mettenberger ended up being the leading passer that year. And we didn't know that Bishop Sankey was horrible yet. And they still had
– Chance Warmack. Was there still hope for Chance Warmack at that point?
And they still had Jarrell Casey. No, I think Warmack was to come because he was a malarkey guy. Delanie Walker was on that team. I don't know that there were great expectations of that team, but I don't think anybody thought this is a 2-14 team going in. Had a finally, you know, a more innovative outsider offensive head coach, right? There was optimism heading into that season. Now, it wasn't long before we knew it wasn't working. And that Tommy didn't know what he was doing, and that Wisenhunt had really done a hell of a job selling himself, and that things were going kaput. But I don't think he went into that season thinking this is going to be the worst team in the league.
I mean, the hire at the time was that's actually not bad for the Titans. Good job, Titans. By the way, speaking of your memory, Chance Warmack was a 2013 pick under Munchak. So.
Sorry. I'm looking at Munchak versus Munchak.
Warmack had been there. My bad. So.
Yeah. And that's Munchak, right? So with Munchak, you think,
that guy knows
the
offensive line.
I mean, he helped you find Michael Roos and David Stewart and made chicken salad out of chicken bleep out of a whole bunch of mid-round picks who played very effective football.
And this guy's supposed to be amazing.
He's going to pick a guard in the early first round who's going to solve their problems. And as a head coach, he missed.
So when we come back, there's one person in particular you mentioned during this that I think is especially important in comparing two people on the big picture question of the Titans and the state of the Titans. Robbie and Rex Show, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. All right, let Joe Walsh get into it a little bit. There we go. Titans training camp, folks. Get started this Wednesday. That would be tomorrow. Tune in for player interviews and the latest updates on the Titans as the team preps for the 25-26 season. Coverage of the Titans training camp is presented by Macero and 12 South and Parman Energy Group. And Ian, make sure I'm right on this. Chase and Big Joe are out there tomorrow.
Tomorrow and Thursday. Yep.
Friday's off, right? And Friday, PK will be back here having gathered all this information, and he'll be here with all of his analysis.
Shockingly
of
re-invited.
All the information that, you need to be respectful toward me the rest of the show. I guess we should. It is conditional. So. George on the YouTube chat says, so Paul's a socialist? Yes, because
really,
some idiot really was yelling socialist hot dogs.
Really got my point.
Thanks for listening. Okay, so I need to ask you about this. We've gotten into more the team and the different eras. But you mentioned Bud Adams. So, like you said, late in his life, you know, he was less involved. Everyone knows, I think, the story about the 2006 right draft. Right, I believe that was the draft when you're looking at Leinart, you're looking at Cutler, you're looking at Vince Young. And by the way, let me just raise my hand. Like, if I was an NFL GM owner or anything, I would have traded my entire team for Vince Young. So understand, you can second guess anything. I would have absolutely gone the way they did. But what I want to ask you, PK, is Bud Adams during the typical tenure of ownership. He was known as being impulsive at times, and at times maybe overstepping what an owner should do, what a good owner should do. But compare that to his daughter, Amy Adams Strunk, right now, and the bigger picture of where this franchise is from that perspective.
Well, that's the only time Bud meddled in personnel, at least in the Jeff Fisher and on era. Jeff Fisher told me that. Only time. I think Bud, if you're going back to influential in league stuff. Obviously, we know Bud's.
Yeah, he's got a case for the Hall of Fame. Yeah. He's got a good case for the Hall of Fame.
In founding the AFL and helping with the merger and doing good stuff for the league, all of that. If you're talking about organizational stability and
yes, growth, that is what I'm talking about.
And understanding of the modern ways, I think that Bud kind of took his foot off the accelerator, if you will, when they got here. Stadium got built. Is a comfortable situation, had a coach and a GM who were established and did relatively good work, particularly early in Jeff Fisher and Floyd Reese, and was an absentee owner, lived in Houston, was only here periodically. Amy's here, my perception is, much more often. And certainly she's had her faults. And has some of his qualities in terms of the hirings and firings in particular. And I'm not just talking about coaches and GMs, but somebody like Vice President of Communications Jimmy Stanton, who was hired to address kind of a clear problem in terms of messaging for the team. And they had one big tiff. In short order, he wasn't here that long, and he was out. You know, and then we've talked about other people. You know, you have a 28-year PR director who's one of the most respected guys in the league, and Robbie Boren, and you know, I don't know what happens exactly there, but he's out, and things like that. But she has an understanding and has let her top employees tell her what they needed to grow into being a modern NFL franchise in terms of growing your marketing arm and growing this Titans house to sell tickets with the new modern stadium and growing things to the point that they built a new building on their campus and it can't even house the employees that they have now in terms of how they've grown. The digital marketing, you know, their social media presence, all of these things that they were nowhere near cutting edge on, that they've caught up to everybody on, that they're a equal to a lot of teams in the league in these departments, where for a long time during Bud, where these things were starting to grow and take off, they just were nowhere. So I think in terms of that, she's done a lot of very good things for the organization. That's all separate of the football.
Yeah.
And she did good things for the football for a while. I mean, Mularkey seemed like a bad move, a bad, comfortable move, but Mularkey got them to a certain level. And Robinson Vrabel at their height was a great pairing that did great things. Not quite great enough. And since then, it's been questionable.
Yeah.
But that's not unlike a lot of franchises.
Sure, sure. It's just, I think it's the next few years are going to be so obviously critical. And of course, we talk constantly about 2027 and the stadium and all that stuff. But I mean, look, like, okay, so what moves did she make? I mean, we could all agree, like, firing John Robinson in season is dumb. It's just dumb. It's ridiculous. I would argue, and I think you would too, that firing Vrabel was short-sighted. But sometimes people also can't coexist, and I think it was getting to that. And I think Vrabel, you know, is not an easy guy.
Not an easy guy to get along with. But she needed to manage it better so it didn't get to that point. And she and whoever she was working with, Burke Nihil in particular, I don't think they did a good job massaging it. And Vrabel is a massager. You know, meet them halfway somewhere. Figure out a way. Because a lot of coaches are difficult. You know? A lot of winning coaches are difficult.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, so Rand Carthon's a bad move.
Terrible.
Is Chad Brinker a bad move?
We don't know yet. Do we?
I mean, no. I don't have the scorecard on all the conversations of things that led them wrong. And frankly, some of the moves they made that we will always just say, good job, Rand, you screwed up. I mean, again, I'll raise my hand and say, like Legarius Sneed. I'm like, man, that's a big land for them. They gave up a lot, but okay. What does he have left? Now, meanwhile, the guy who was part of dealing that is now here. Dealing with that problem now. Here. But
yeah, I mean, I think the Brinker scorecard is still to be written largely in Borgonzi, right? I mean, that's the biggest move Brinker has made is hiring Borgonzi. So how do they do together personnel-wise, clean slated after all the stuff was up? I don't think, you know, Brinker brought in Rand brought in Brinker. You know, it wasn't right. Brinker bringing in Rand.
Yeah.
So
Rand went and got Brinker.
And then Amy elevated Brinker and fired Rand.
Over Rand, right.
Kind of weird.
Fell in love with Brinker. I mean, that's the thing. To me, that's the, like, and you're right. I think it's like, I mean, Borgonzi, I would assume, I think it's interesting that Brinker's talking too. But, like, let's say that they are better than they were under Rand and they, you know, they make a big move at some point. Is it probably just Borgonzi talking about it?
I don't know.
He's kind of the face.
I mean, I think Brinker knows it's a little bit awkward that they both talk. But we made such a big deal out of him being the final say guy that if he's not there, I think we say, well, we want to hear from the final say guy too.
Right.
And then when he is there, we say, well, that's why
weird.
Is he here?
God, that's weird.
He's not, you know, we're listening to Borgonzi, but we don't have the final say guy. So I think he kind of, we could shred him either way. The other thing about Amy, I will say, is I think, and I'm sure this happens in every organization to a degree, people sell themselves to her. I mean, Burke Nyhill sold himself to her. He delivered a stadium, so he probably, you know, is solid as can be for a long time. But there are certain people, and Brinker is at that level now too, I think they are at high faith levels. There are other people in the organization of lower standing who can do no wrong because they are Amy people. And there are other people, you know, one person.
Pins and needles at all times?
Yes. Well, and I think a lot of old guard people. But there was one person who did very, very good work for the team for a long time. And he did very, very good work for Tommy Smith. Well, Amy and Tommy don't like each other. Well, I don't know what Tommy thinks of Amy. Amy doesn't like Tommy. Most of the family doesn't like Tommy. So this person, despite the fact that he did good work for the organization for a long time, when she came in, she perceived him as a Tommy guy because he's a good soldier and Tommy was in charge and he wanted to help Tommy make things work. So she came in and saw him as a Tommy guy. And guess what she did with Tommy guys?
And we're talking Steve.
No, not Steve.
Oh. Woo-hoo!
Everybody likes Steve. Steve is the consigliere for the Adams family, period. I don't want to say because I don't want to make him look bad.
Good God. Now, you're not going to name names? All right, when we come back, we'll see if we can get PK to name names. And we'll actually start talking a little bit about this team, too. Will Levis out, Sneed on the pup. A lot of stuff going on as things get going with the Titans. Robbie and Rex are 102.5, 106.3 the game. This week's Nashville's best deal is Eastside Bowl in Madison. Eastside Bowl is a vintage bowling alley, music venue, lounge, and arcade designed by locals for locals. Get 2 hours of bowl plus shoe rentals for up to 6 people for just $45 while supplies last. Go to GameNashville.com/deals to get yours now. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex, 102.5, 106.3 the game. Paul Kaharski in for Robbie today, and we do have some questions about the players, the current team. We will get to those, but you had more on Bud Adams.
Yeah, well, the one thing I was forgetting in terms of Bud intervening, 2012, he held everything up. He made them go after Peyton Manning.
Yeah.
And they could not win Peyton Manning. They were not going to win Peyton Manning.
Was there ever a chance? Was there ever a whisper of a
Listen,
chance?
Here's the biggest thing about that chase. Was that Chris Palmer was the offensive coordinator. Well, Chris Palmer had been with the Giants, and Eli Manning knew Chris Palmer. Now, they should have been able to draw the dots and know that Eli Manning was not endorsing Chris
Palmer.
Not a
fan. Not a fan of Chris Palmer.
And that was a big undoing there. But what happened is they were holding $23 million, roughly, in cap money for Peyton Manning. This signing happened late, and so their whole offseason and free agency stuff got screwed up.
They didn't do anything. They didn't do enough.
And so they didn't really get anybody.
And they went 6-10 that year.
Yeah. And so he screwed them up that year.
Now, granted, I will say, I'm probably awfully enamored with the idea at that point of trying to land Peyton Manning, right?
Yes, but I think you have to have a realistic sense of it. And now the day after the season was over, on Monday morning, Jim Wyatt called Bud Adams, working for the Tennessean, and Bud basically said, yeah, Reinfeldt's out. Didn't get Peyton Manning. Fisher stays.
Wild times. All right, Coy in Clarksville.
Oh, no. Who stays? Munchak. Was it Munchak at that point?
Yeah, it was Munchak. Coy in Clarksville says, I'm assuming with Will Levis out that Cam has won the starting QB job, or did he already have it won? I mean, I would say that he was going to be the starter no matter what. Here, let me ask you this to you this way, PK. Was Levis, if you could say that Will Levis, before the season-ending shoulder surgery, was in a competition, was he more in a competition for QB1 or for QB2? Or was he in a competition for neither and was just locked in as QB2?
I mean, I think maybe in their heads he was in competition for QB2. I think if there was a 5% scenario that Cam had a miserable month of August and Levis had a fantastic month of August, and they said, all right, let's ride this for as long as it lasts.
Start this way, and then the first sign of trouble, you're going to go to him.
Yeah.
But it would have had to be, to me,
both.
Like extreme.
Yeah.
Probably extreme on both fronts, right?
Yes.
Matt from Camden, L'Jarius Sneed starting camp on the PUP is a disaster. Agree?
I don't think it's a disaster. I think it's – it tells you something. I said earlier that this is the day, today, report day, where you should be at your very healthiest. Unless you tore something or strained something or suffered an injury – during OTAs or minicamp, you should be at your absolute healthiest today.
It's so not getting better. It's not getting better from here.
That he's not at his absolute healthiest and able to be on the field in some way, shape, or form tomorrow is either indicative of the injury or indicative of just how protective they're going to be. And PUP keeps you protected, right? And so they we're going to give him another 2 weeks. He only needs 2 weeks or 3 weeks of camp, and we could start him and ramp him up. And I wouldn't be surprised if they keep him on this thing until, say, 10 days before, or even just start him on the Monday before the opener and give him a regular practice week to let him go and get ready for the game plan and all of that. I figure he's a veteran guy who only needs that much, and he's going to practice.
Well, a regular practice
week. Do that
and
then give him his Wednesday Veterans Day off.
Yeah, a regular practice week for him, isn't that no practice? so we'll see him for
– who needs practice?
He just flies in for games.
Allen Iverson over here.
That's right. It's just everything with him has been
– it's a lot of faith-based operation with L'Jarius Sneed at this point.
Cushenberry, we haven't talked about him yet, but obviously no surprise that he's on the pup list here.
I think opening day would be 8 months on the dot, and 8 months is a significant number in Achilles recovery.
So you think opening day is possible?
I think it's possible.
But see, there's a difference. Obviously with Sneed, I think cornerback is probably, in terms of practice, needing to practice for a game, I think corner is probably – you can make the cases at the top. I mean, other than like long snapping, which you can just like work on your long snapping, it's pretty close to the top of the list of like you can go out there if you're a veteran and just play.
Cover that guy.
But I feel like
running back.
I feel like Cushenberry, center of this offensive line, you'd think you would need some. And then, of course, you know, maybe like you said, Zeitler might have old guy days off too. But it just seems awfully fast to think that Cushenberry might be available.
A lot easier for a lineman to come back from that than anybody who's you know, operating in more space. you know, they really need that chemistry down on the offensive right. line. And you really want him working with Zeitler and with Skoronski and that whole group working together in some way, shape, or form. I would think, you know, hopefully they could get him out there for walkthroughs sooner rather than later. He'd have to be off PUP for that, I'm pretty sure. And, you know, he's in those meetings and everything. But I've said those guys need to jive and jive early. And maybe it's Lavin for a couple games at the beginning. And you got to expect the same thing from him. They've got a lot of faith in him. And he's done some decent work. But
those are tough games, too. Those are tough games with rookie QB and then with your fill-in center.
At Denver, home versus LA.
Yeah, playing those two teams.
And that rookie, yeah. And that, you know, just the exchange.
Right. Yeah. You mentioned Skoronski. Megan did ask earlier, I forgot to throw it at you, do you feel like Skoronski's feet are, you know, nice and trim? Like any information on the fatness of his feet?
I don't remember the fatness of his feet being a thing. I presume apparently this is a Stilly thing.
That's a Stilly. It is a Stilly thing. But I didn't bring it up. Megan brought it up.
Skoronski got better last year, despite what people will have you believe, and I expect him to get better this year.
How much better?
I mean, I don't think he's ever going to be worth the slot where they drafted him. Right. Do I think he can be an above-average guard in the NFL? Absolutely.
Okay. Got a texter saying, "Dear God, just get rid of Levis and Snead, two names I cannot wait to stop hearing. Both guys are a waste of breath and money."
Well, you're not going to hear anything about Levis.
Yeah, as soon as we're done
surgery goes well, ideally he would speak once. He probably won't. There'll be questions about him today with the management guys, and there'll be questions about him tomorrow with the coach, and there'll be questions about him the first time Cam talks, and then that'll be it.
The Titans are – give me the adjective – or the what are the Titans? The Titans angry
about Levis?
Yeah,
I think so. Yeah,
like blindsided by this a bit.
Probably yes. I think they thought there was a chance that he would need surgery eventually. Eventually being not now.
Right. Eventually being probably after the season. Now, granted, if you're him, I mean, I guess I would make the case. Why didn't you do it in February?
Well, I think he would say, you were telling me to rest and rehab and maybe I'd need surgery down the road. And now I'm down the road.
Down the road is the timing of down the road is, you know, I can't blame anyone for being mad at him.
I agree.
And also, I
think it's hugely disappointing.
I just don't see how. I understand how it takes him out of having to deal with, hey, Will, good to see you out here. Hey, there's the guy who is now the starter, and sorry that we never moved you, and you can just...
I don't think they owe him any sorries.
No, I understand. I'm not saying they do.
It's life in the big city.
That's all I'm saying is the only thing that you did, if you're him, is you got away from having to deal with that on a daily basis, but I don't think he helped himself in the terms of the market.
I think it's a huge mistake not to issue a statement or make yourself available very quickly to explain it.
And look,
and explaining it, you're going to talk about my shoulder's really bothering me. It's really messed up. I wasn't going to help this team if I was called on because I can't throw correctly.
And he's telling people who watched him in OTAs throw the football and with no detection of an issue. It doesn't mean he wasn't hurting, but there's a lot of stuff here that doesn't quite add up. All right, we get back. We will wrap up. We'll finish talking about Levis and anything else that you'd like to ask PK. Get those questions in. Robbie and Rex are 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Final segment, Robbie and Rex are 102.5, 106.3 The Game. PK in for Robbie. Ian Safar producing. I'm Joe Rexroad. I've got question of the text line for PK. Oh, but first, I keep getting texted by Stilly. I'm not bringing up Stilly. Stilly's infiltrating my text line. He says, Levis was not locked in for QB2. Levis was locked in for QB3. Brandon Allen was the backup QB. Jared Stoneman with a strong declaration. Paul Kaharski, your thoughts?
It's just not correct.
Good, strong declaration. Incorrect, but strong.
I mean, no, I don't know how he thinks anybody was locked in for either of those spots.
How would Brandon – I got to ask, like, how would Brandon Allen – again, I was in favor of moving Levis and fine, take your But Brandon Allen, we talked about it earlier, there's nothing on him to suggest that he would be a good QB too.
I guess Jared buys this. He's familiar with the system. Like he's more familiar with the system than Will Levis, who ran the system as the starter in the system last year.
Was there a scenario that Levis would hit the field at all this season to play in a game if he weren't under calling it a quits, I guess, this season?
Well, I mean, the most likely scenario is Cam Ward's the starter. So unless he's hurt, nobody's hitting the field.
Think he would have been third in line for that?
I think he would have been second in line.
Second in line?
I mean, I think he's the second best quarterback on the roster.
Yeah. He's certainly more talented than Brandon Allen. You know, you can get into the game manager versus risk taker thing. But I have
I think Brandon Allen is not as good as Mason Rudolph, and I think Mason Rudolph was horrific.
Yeah, he was pretty bad. I've got Andy saying, why do you think the Titans have not addressed a stud replacement for Harold Landry? Seems to be a few defensive ends on the market.
All these defensive ends on the market are old. Old or have major injury history. Again, this is a question that makes it...
And a lot of them are kind of, they want to go to a winning team.
This is a question that makes it sound like we're in free agency now. We're not in free agency. Like, the good players have been signed.
I will say that some of the names you read off during the break at Edge, I mean, it's a lot of the guys, like, Big Z's out there, and Matthew Judon's
Sam
out there.
Sam Hubbard, Von Miller.
Some guys who have
Shaquille
Barrett,
have been very Carl Lawson, players. Tyus Bowser, Matt Judon.
Not long ago, a lot of those guys
Zadarius Smith, Clowney, who we'd never want to see here again, Trevis Gibson, Jerry Hughes. A lot of them successful. Probably all of them on the wrong side of 30. All of them with most of them with some injury history.
Yeah, I still would say if you can bring in any sort of reasonable football player at that position, I would be open to that if I were the Titans because it looks so bare.
I would guess what they'll do. This is what they usually do, is they're going to look at their guys and assess it. Now, in 3 weeks, they say, boy, we really, really don't have anything because they're expecting, obviously, stuff out of the guys that they have. And I'm talking even Allie Gay and who's the late draft pick from last year?
Jalen Harrell.
Jalen Harrell. You know, particularly if those two guys don't show, then I could see them shopping. Also, they're at the top of the waiver wire. I think any inside or outside linebackers you see coming through there, they're going to give a very good look to.
Got a texter asking an interesting question. Is there a guy on the offensive line with an edge like Taylor Lewan who will fight you if Cam takes a bad hit?
I think Zeitler is probably...
Zeitler would be your... Yeah, I think you're right.
My candidate.
He brings a little surly demeanor to the table.
Latham might have some of that in him. Yeah. I don't know. We don't know Moore yet.
Right. Yeah, I have no idea. I know that Pittsburgh Steelers fans are glad he doesn't play left tackle for the Steelers anymore. But I still think he's probably going to be some level of upgrade. I mean, to me... You know, when you talk about stuff you're looking at this week, PK, obviously everybody's focused on Cam Ward, but I mean, who is Dan Moore going to be blocking? You sure hope that he takes care of his area with this edge group he's looking at.
I think Dan Moore is maybe the symbol of this team, right? They have high hopes for him. They expect him to be better than he was. They're not dismissive of what he didn't do last year, but they're convinced he's better than that. They have a little bit of an excuse for what his failures last year.
It's the fact that he played against such good edge guys.
Yeah, which is kind of crazy because they're good edge guys in this division and there's good edge guys all over. They're not Myles Garrett, but guess what? You know, they're good pass rushers everywhere. Dan Moore, to me, is the symbol of this regime right now. You had to have a left tackle. That's the strategy they decided on. We're going to get the guy that a lot of people think is the best guy available, but he's not great. He's not terrific. We're going to overpay for him. We're going to coach him up. We're going to continue to develop him. We like his personality. We like his temperament. We think he fits our personality. Now, does he make us look good or does he make us look bad?
He is one of the biggest stories, no question, of this season. I got people now Taylor Lewan, he's just getting pummeled. Jonathan Mies Nestle says, why do we want more penalties? Texter says, when did Lewan fight somebody? He pretended like he would all the time. Ah, Lewan. I would push back on that. Lewan got into it. He was protective of Marcus.
What did
he
get into it with Jamal Adams?
I mean, he had the whole thing on the sideline after they beat Washington with Josh Norman, where he was making fun of him. But then he didn't. But that also would have been unfair if he would have fought him. I think Lewan, he got some penalties that hurt them. But I think he had that. I think he had that I'm going to protect my QB thing.
Look, Taylor Lewan didn't last. And I know people are frustrated that he didn't last and frustrated with some of the performative stuff about Taylor Lewan. Taylor Lewan was about as athletic a left tackle as you could find who's not a Hall of Fame guy because he broke down and fell apart and got distracted and all of that stuff. But in his first contract, when he was playing at his peak.
After his first couple of years.
That guy was a terrific, terrific player. A phenomenal pick by Rustin Webster.
16, 17. I mean, 18, those range, I think he was top five left tackle in the league.
It all went downhill after the Boss Hogg second contract and the suspension.
Well, and especially, and obviously the knee. I think Lewan, last week, this happens every few months. We get into people who hated Tannehill so much, they like want to believe he was just terrible and was never, And I think Lewan is another one of those guys who's not going to be remembered as well as a player as he should have been, maybe because of some of the other stuff.
Because of other stuff. He should be remembered as a very good player.
Absolutely.
Who was undone really by the knee.
Yeah. Matthew's asking, what about Cushenberry? Is that kind of guy if he's healthy? I don't know. Is he that kind of guy?
I think he's very mellow.
Pretty mild-mannered. All right, 1 minute to go, PK. So, Berserker, Borgonzi and Breaker, speak today. You've already said some stuff that you want to ask some things like that.
Berserker.
Yes, thank you. What's potentially the most surprising thing that you might hear from them today? Maybe you can give us a hint of something you know about.
I don't know about much. I just plug back in tomorrow. I wonder what their tone will be on the Levis thing. I mean, I think they'll take the high road, but I think there could be some tone in there that makes it very clear that they had different expectations and that they're disappointed in the way this goes, and it throws them off a little bit in their plan there.
Do you think they go it all out for another QB other than just like a practice arm?
I don't know who that would be.
All right, PK, it's been fun, my friend.
Likewise.
Yeah, good to see you again,
I'll see you Friday. Take care of that gout foot.
Yeah, the guy. We're working on it, man.
We'll get a GoFundMe for the cane if we need. Don't block the box. Be sure to lock your locks.
Chase and Big Joe coming up next. 102.5, 106.3 The Game.